Across the world, we're seeing a rise in hate groups, and Canada certainly hasn't been immune to that. Why are Canadians getting pulled into things like neo-Nazi organizations? To answer that, joining me on the line is Vivek Venkatesh, co-chair of UNESCO's, that's the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. He is the co-chair in prevention of radicalization, and Vivek is also a professor at Concordia University. Good morning, Vivek. Thanks for coming on the show.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
So you studied this, and I can't imagine. I know you talked to people that had become radicalized.
Yeah, absolutely. Our team spoke to 10 individuals, 10 Canadians, who are former extremists. So they had been part of right-wing extremist movements, white power movements.
How does it feel when you meet someone who, you know, if you went back a few years, would have been, you know, very, you know, perhaps even violent against someone like you?
That's a really good question, and in fact brings to bear the amount of self-care and support that we needed to offer each other as a research team. In terms of how it feels, the only thing that comes to mind for me is a sense of empathy and humanism. I think it's really important to treat this issue with empathy and humanism so that it's not just an issue that needs to be taken care of by public safety or public policy holders, but a whole society approach. Mm-hmm. And the idea here is to ensure that in a community and in a society where we focus on rehabilitation, that we can actually live by those particular standards.
What did these people tell you, Vivek? Why did they, you know, decide, okay, I want to become a neo-Nazi? How did that happen?
You know, the thing that comes to mind the most, which is also linked very closely to the work that we're engaged in the UNESCO chair, is how these youth, when they were youth, how they felt disenfranchised, how they felt like they were deprived of certain rights that they felt were due to them, whether these rights were they felt that they had to be in a majority within their communities, they felt that they deserved certain work, certain jobs over others. They also felt that there were really no pathways within their families, within the societal structures, within communities, but also within schools for them to ask or discuss some of the difficult questions that they were grappling with. They had questions that are actually very, very normal for anyone to consider. For example, why are there so many immigrants in our neighborhood now? Why is it that, you know, my relative is on social services and I'm able to make ends meet, but the government is helping out these immigrants who are not Canadian, so to speak. What came across very, very, very clearly from these former extremists is that if they had the opportunity to actually ask these tough questions, but also get a response from a group they trusted who didn't judge them, then they might not have gone down what they describe as a dark path, where the right-wing extremist groups were echoing these sentiments.
So, Vivek, you know, as I'm listening to you here, it sounds like, you know, they want answers to questions that a lot of people have. They can't get those answers from, you know, teachers or people, you know, people around them. They probably end up on the internet and watching a YouTube video or going to a link, and then at the end of the day, they get information from right-wing groups.
Yeah, this is the reality of today. But, you know, the people that we spoke to had been in the movement in the 90s and early 2000s. And this was at an era where, I'm not saying that the internet and fora were not being used. I remember studying Stormfront in the early 2000s as well. But that was a much more underground forum than it is now. This is, in fact, by word of mouth and through physical communal structures that they were recruited. But you're absolutely right. One cannot deny the magnified effect of echo chambers in social media that resonate and magnify a point of view that may be false, that may be falsified, that has that's ridden with disinformation, and that preys on the disenfranchisement that these youth feel.
We're speaking with Vivek Venkatesh. He's UNESCO's co-chair in prevention of radicalization, also a professor at Concordia University. Vivek, you know, I don't want to be naive, right? You know, in my mind, I've always said, oh, you know what? We're lucky we're in Canada. We have a higher, like the moat that we have guarding against people getting radicalized. I've always felt, okay, well, we've got a bigger and better moat because of our educational system than other countries. Am I naive in thinking that?
No, Elias, I certainly wouldn't. You especially, because I've met you several times. You certainly don't you're not naive. But I think from a broader public standpoint, I think it's important for us. There's a couple of things that come to mind. One is that the threat to radicalization and the threat of harm through terrorism is growing in Canada, and this is not something that I'm making up. In fact, the Global Terrorism Index has pointed out that Canada's risen in the rankings, and this is one of the rankings we don't want to rise in. And in the West, or what's known as the Occident, the threat to far right extremism is growing. In Canada itself, we've seen with the Quebec mosque attacks, with the Toronto van attack, these all fall under the broad construct of far right extremism. But to your broad question, no, it's not naive, and I think it's important for us to stay informed. But what's important as well is that we need to equip the key stakeholders in social services, in education, and in mental health to be able to support people who are feeling like they don't belong to the broader society. And teachers who we work with are saying, look, I'm really, really confused. I have my own political values as a person. I'm supposed to set those aside and create an environment in a class that's pluralistic, that encourages pluralistic dialogue. I'm supposed to allow students to make errors. So there might be a racist statement that's made. There's a bigoted statement, a xenophobic statement that might be made in error. How do you control for that in the class? And so there's a certain freedom of expression that needs to be encouraged both for the students as well as for the teachers. But this also needs to be couched with broader activities that parents, that community members can follow up with. And it begins and it ends in a whole society approach. I think the next time we hear someone make a bigoted statement, you know, you weigh the pros and cons of calling that person out. Whereas, you know, speaking to your children when you're with them and saying, look, I didn't call that person out because I don't want to get into a fight, but I do want to tell you that what that person said was wrong. I think there's a lot that can be done, and it's become too easy now in an era of social media to depend on this cancel culture to show up someone online and walk away and think that you have gained a certain notch. And this is, you know, there are social justice activist movements that have succeeded very well in showing the plight of marginalized peoples, don't get me wrong. But a lack of dialogue and shutting people down whose opinions are different than others, simply because one disagrees with them, is where a lot of these problems arise. It's where a lot of people feel disenfranchised and begin to go underground, literally, to find some meaning.
Vivek, I'm almost out of time here, but we talk so much about the darkness. Let's talk a little bit about the light. And if you can quickly recap, how did these people that you talked to, how did they get out of these organizations, out of this extreme, you know, out of these extremist groups?
Yeah, you know, they certainly felt a void when they began to lose the motivation to detach themselves and disengage from the ideology that was driving them within these movements. Very often, the former extremists point to the fact that they had families, they got married, they had children, and they couldn't find any reason to continue being in these bigoted movements and transferring those philosophies down to the future generations. This being said, you know, these are 10 mostly off the grid former extremists who we spoke to, and you know, I'm not naive either, and I think that for every person who's talked about moving away, there are probably people who get even more firmly entrenched once they have families.
So, Vivek, we got to leave it there. I want to thank you for coming on the program.
Thanks so much.
That's Vivek Venkatesh, UNESCO co-chair in prevention of radicalization, also a professor at Concordia University.